Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio, Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Oh, yeah. Hello and welcome. It's another episode of the Confessions podcast brought to you by your friends at Greatest Hits Radio, where we invite you weekly to step into our humble confessional and unburden your guilty conscience. The place where we delve into the... Get on with it. Okay, yeah. Sister Susie's in the pub. Hello.
I am indeed. Hello.
Brother Matthew is in the car.
Yes.
What was that?
Yes. That was a sort of... I was a new thing I'm trying out.
Worked new well, voice. Yeah. And Sister Holly is in the cupboard of tat.
Howdy.
Coming up, we're going to take a trip to the parish notice board. Will it be glowing with praise again, or are we in for a few stern words? Probably not, because Matt ignores all of those. We'll also sneak a look at the Mark Knopfler section, and of course, you'll hear all the confessions from the Drive Time show on Greatest Hits Radio, which include Kirk's not-so-daring mission to secure a desert sand souvenir for his mother-in-law from Kuwait, which probably has Matt's favourite title so far, Enter Sandman.
Oh, long overdue.
Luke's looking out for his elderly dad at a 21st birthday in Turn the Music Up. Mr. Mallet's confession, I am Inspector Clouseau of the Lair. But first...
Are we going to do that every time? I really hope so.
But first, we're rolling back to the rave nights of the 90s for Jemima's Damp Puddle Tale, the one we called... Oh, I can't keep it in.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Very definitely a 12 certificate on this, but suitable for some families and not others. Dear Simon and the harmonious heavenly helpers of heretics, I take you back to the summer of 1990. Carefree festival days of raves, the Hacienda, Happy Mondays, Adamski and the Charlatans. You get the picture. It was Manchester rave heaven. In a vain attempt to recreate this in the South, we partied, clubbed and stayed up all night at house parties, wearing oversized dungarees and silly summer beach hats that your granddad used to wear at Great Yarmouth. A sort of oversized Bill and Ben look, which is not bad, really. One such night involved me in a clandestine relationship with Pete, not his real name, Pete the Peanut Salesman, from here on known as Pete the Peanut Man. Pete was a Britpop vision, a true raver with hair hanging in blonde curtains, the envy of Harris Drape, a Manchester drawl, even though he was from Bognor, and a bevy of Meg Matthews wannabes craving his affections, including his girlfriend and his very jealous flatmate. I was very taken with Pete, and I found myself with the ideal opportunity to shine one Friday night whilst out with the in crowd at a club in town. Pete obviously felt the same way and in a romantic gesture caught me on the stairs by the loos and whisked me out into the back entrance of the club, past the bins, the back of the kitchen and back of the next door Indian takeaway and back to his second floor flat, leaving the party crowd, including girlfriend and very jealous flatmate, leaping and a-bopping the night away to the cool sounds of Guru Josh and D-Light. Groove was most definitely in the house. When reaching the flat, I was aware that I had consumed a large amount of wine and I might need to pop to the bathroom. However, Pete the Peanut Man was overcome with passion and proceeded with his romantic quest.
Time passed.
As I looked over my shoulder, I realised my trip to the bathroom situated the other end of the flat, past the lounge and the kitchen, would have to wait a while. A few minutes into the liaison, I was aware of a noise outside the flat, sounding like a rowdy rabble of ravers. Then the sound of the key in the lock followed, and Pete's face drained when he realised that the party crowd, which was in fact a rowdy rabble, including girlfriend and very jealous flatmate, all ascending the stairs at top speed with the entire contents of an off-licence, and a bollard, a B-jam shopping trolley, and a garden gnome playing croquet, clearly planning to continue the all-night party in the flat. Well, Pete the Peanut Man took charge of the situation in a style of chivalry that would make Colin Firth envious. He ordered me to stay where I was, keep quiet and not come out until everyone had gone. Thanks, Pete. With that, he turned the light off and left the room.
What?
Grateful for his consideration, I stood in the darkness gathering my thoughts and remembering that the bathroom was situated miles away across the now loud and proud Party Central. Hours later, the bass was still pumping, I'm pacing up and down, and the urge to go had turned into an overwhelming obsession. I tried to sleep, adopted every yoga position known to man to relieve the pressure. What was I to do? I couldn't leave the room in fear of outing Pete the Peanut Man and getting lynched by the girlfriend and the very jealous flatmate. Could I pee out of the window? Second floor? No. Was there anything to pee in? No, there wasn't. Not even a moldy cup under the bed. Simon, there was only one option. Relieve the pressure, minimising the bladder volume slightly in preparedness for the main event, and dash to the loo when everyone finally left.
Oh, no.
Alas, you might know that this kind of thing is not possible, and once you start, there's no holding back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Pete the Peanut Man rented a nice 80s purpose-built flat with magnolia walls and cardboard walls and fine, hard, thin, dark grey cord variety of carpet that serves no purpose apart from sandpapering your knees, clearly no pile and nil absorption capacity. So to my horror, the raised puddle which I had created was going nowhere, sitting proud like a magnificent 3D lake in an oasis of impenetrable cord carpet. But rescue was at hand. A bag full of dirty washing was stashed in the corner of the bedroom, and as luck would have it, a rather fluffy and absorbent looking white towel was on top. I grabbed the towel and mopped up the lake. To my joy, not a mark was left on the carpet. It was as if nothing had happened.
Well done.
My reputation was intact, and more importantly, I felt comfortable again. Phew! I buried the towel in the bottom of the dirty washing bag, climbed into bed whilst the party began to wind down, and fell asleep, dreaming of selling cashews at Great Yarmouth Pier with Pete the Peanut Man. At about 8 o'clock in the morning, Pete returned, girlfriend finally collapsed asleep on the sofa, along with a number of spent partygoers. Oh, the 90s. And very jealous flatmate was safely tucked up in her room, dreaming of annihilating any competition and rolling round on a cord carpet with Pete the Peanut Man covered in peanut butter. Anyway, he hurriedly and nervously ushered me out of the flat, stepping over the comatose drunken bodies strewn on the floor. It was then I noticed he'd grabbed the dirty washing bag from the corner of the bedroom on the way out. How organised is he, I thought, off to the laundrette on a Saturday morning to do the wash. I may as well not go to bed, he said. I'm off to play squash instead. See you around. And with that, he disappeared into the morning sunshine, his blonde hair curtains billowing in the breeze, heading gymward, never to be seen again. And it was then I realised that the dirty washing bag was actually his gym kit, and the towel was for the shower afterwards. And so Father Simon asked for forgiveness, not from Pete the Peanut Man, not even girlfriend, nor even very jealous flatmate, but to Pete's mum, who obviously did all his washing, including clearly tumble drying his towels to make them extra fluffy. And she would have got a bit of a eye opener and a nose opener indeed,
nose opener,
when she went for the latest bag full of rubbish from her son. Anyway, Sister Suze, what do you say here?
Well, I don't know what to say to Jemima.
Sordid.
Here.
Sordid.
It is sordid. And like, part of me is like, you shouldn't have done any of this because you knew that Pete the Peanut Man had a girlfriend. So therefore, when he invited you back to his house, took you out and da-da-da-da-da, you should have gone, no, Pete, I'm all right, thank you very much. And then even worse, when you're like, oh, he's locked me up in his bedroom, I couldn't leave, could I? Yes, you could. You could have just got out and gone home, gone to the loo before you left, and there wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah.
So I kind of don't want to forgive you for those reasons, but I also feel like he deserved washing in that towel, so I'm going to forgive you.
Oh, you are going to forgive? Oh, okay, a little U-turn there at the end. Brother Matthew.
So I'm going to forgive. I mean, it's worth saying again, good-looking boys are the worst. They are the worst. And so obviously I'm going to come out against him and his peanuts and whatever else. And as Rose Royce, I think, put it best, when they said down at the car wash, if you're going to take your towel, make sure it's not soaked in something that it shouldn't be soaked in. So for all of those reasons, and because I can hear Rose Royce even now ramping up with a great 70s tune, I choose to forget.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
So we should say, obviously, if you didn't hear the show, obviously Rose Royce was playing underneath. I started it because it's got a 50-second voiceover, and I knew it was also a good way of restraining Matt.
Hurrying me up. I'm like Adrian Brody at the Oscars. I should have just kept going. Like he did,
no,
twice.
I think you did just keep going.
No, that's
I think
true.
You were exactly
yeah.
like
I was inspired by Adrian Brody.
I just want to do a little bit of field research here. Holly, in your experience, are good-looking boys the worst?
No.
Okay. Susie, let's just try that out with you. Susie, in your experience, are good-looking boys the worst?
I don't think the worst boys come down to their looks. I think it just depends whether they've got an attitude or not.
Mm, because if they've got a bad attitude, then I actually find them more unattractive physically as well as spiritually.
Spiritually.
Okay.
Oh, all right. My God.
Very interesting scientific research there.
Well, here's, right, so here's my theory, right? Yeah. Is good-looking people, so that's good-looking people, get away with the most. They get away with everything. And of good-looking people, good-looking boys play on that the most. So good-looking people get away with everything. They get doors open for them everywhere, and good-looking boys play up to that.
Is this why you hate all of us?
Really? That's so true, Molly!
So true.
Got a mixed reaction on the people's verdict, including this very topical one.
Corrine says Jemima is absolutely not forgiven. It seems to me the only reason she didn't want to come out of the room was to protect Peter. I know it was the 90s, and we've all come a long way since then, but where was her girl power?
Yes.
Not least her solidarity with what must have been his very long-suffering girlfriend.
Girl power, because we had Spice Girl Mel B on the show this week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you look at our socials, you can. It's all filmed, and it all looks rather fabulous. Anyway, before we get back to this week's confessions, it's time for the parish notice board, and Matt has been gazing mindlessly at it.
I have, but I've only decided to pick out the ones that praise us to the skies, so if you don't leave anything but five stars, then we don't read them out. So Nurse Vivian says, five stars, Nurse Vivian. Fabulous. Love to listen every week. Makes me smile. Short and to the point, Nurse Vivian. Well done. Always five stars, says a collection of
percentage,
symbols.
Hashtag
at speech and, marks and speech the letter mark. J. Five stars. This is only one.
That's
of,
not a name.
It's not really a name. No. This is only one of two podcasts I listen to, the other being a book review. I listen every Saturday morning whilst mucking out my horse's stables. Makes me smile and laugh. Very entertaining.
Thanks, percentage. Hashtag.
Thank you.
At speech marks J.
And DCUK79 says, downright fun. So glad I found this again. The Motley team somehow managed to bring laughter to what could be a dodgy confession. Matt for Prime Minister, Simon the ever-knowing as Home Secretary, and Holly for Chancellor. Holly for Chancellor. Just let himself down there, DCUK79. Yeah. Five stars all the way. I like the fact that I'm Prime Minister and everyone else is beneath
Secretary?
Me. Yeah. You're Home Secretary. You're out in the first reshuffle, obviously. Holly for Chancellor.
No,
a little bit more power for Holly there.
I'm going to conspire with Holly to bring you down.
Bring me down. Knight of the Long Knives.
Yes.
Great political reference there. Getting so much of it in this time.
I'm just going to cut in there, much like the orchestra did at the Oscars. Yep. Susie, what notice do you have from the notice board?
Well, I've picked up an email from 9-year-old Rex.
Yes.
Although I do suspect it's mostly from his mum, but we'll see. Who says, hi, Simon and the Holy Team. We listen to your confessions podcast every week and we really look forward to it. I listen to it with my mum on the way back from school and swimming lessons. She's going to have an operation in about a month and won't be able to walk for 2 weeks. She's planning on listening to all of your old podcasts while she recovers. I would like to give her a Simon Mayo mug to have a tea in every day. If Sister Holly has one spare, please. I will have to learn how to make a cup of tea first, though. Love from Rex, age 9, and Mum, Susie. P.S. Too much bingo already.
Yes,
that was Matt's fault.
Yeah, my fault. Oh my goodness, went game into
so,
that again.
Actually, Susie is just so. Is that Susie? Do you think writing to us asking for a mug? Sure, let's just assume it's from Rex.
It's from Rex. He's 9-year-old. He's written the email, hasn't he? Yes.
Well, maybe he has.
So, Holly, are you going to say no to the 9-year-old Rex who's got a mum in hospital? Are you going to say no to him? I'm looking forward to this.
Of course. Of course, we'll send him, send him a mug.
Yes. I just want to say this, not about the mug, but about listening to the Confessions podcast whilst recovering from clearly an operation.
Yes.
And after an operation, presumably there'll be stitches somewhere.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And this podcast makes you laugh so much, you might it might put the stitches in danger.
Yes.
Danger.
If only there were a jingle. Oh, there it is. I hold it.
If you see, you have to think of the stitches, don't you?
You do have to think of the stitches.
Think of the stitches and also the 9-year-old making the cup of tea, hot water.
Again.
Yes. Yep.
Danger. Yep. Hot water. Yeah.
Hot water. Very good.
Hot water.
The high voltage has made the hot water. So we will send a mug then, if Holly has approved that.
Yes.
Yes, okay, that will arrive. Just be very careful listening to the podcast if you've got stitches.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't want to set you back, anything like that. Keep your additions to our notice board coming, please. confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. I hope it goes very well for Susie. And thank you to Rex. Couple of mentions now to Michael Patterson, Neil Ogden, Stuart G, 1972, Mr. Hyphen Sean, 99.
Not proper
names. Eddie Howard. Oh, a proper
Eddie
name.
Eddie Howard.
Mark Tomes, a proper name. And Pam Douglas, also proper, who were amongst those who got in touch with the secret code phrase, which I have to look at all the time, with loads of people saying, go in your pants. A most unusual thing.
Love it. Love
Matt will have a new secret code phrase at the end of this year podcast. And now, as you know, not every confession is fit for polite society. In fact, most of them aren't. Some are particularly revolting or too rude or illegal to be read out at tea time. Yes, that means that it's time for the Mark Knopfler section, where confessions that are marked by Susie, unsuitable for the radio, end up. And we start with Frank. Frank, now your friend might have borrowed money from you without planning to return it, and you are right that that isn't a very friendly thing. However, the fact that you decided to take revenge by leaving a carefully wrapped present on his doorstep at midnight is basically not okay. Nobody needs a midnight poo parcel.
I mean,
it's also pathetic and sort of childish.
But also the faff involved in putting that together. I mean, none of you come out of this well, do you?
No, because you've got to do the scooping and the wrapping and the wrapping folding. And
who's,
placing.
Wipe your hands.
Sniffing.
Yes, no. Yep. So that's a no all round.
Also, Barry, you may have been angry at your housemate for stealing your food. You know where this is going. But getting back at them was never going to end well, was it? It was also never going to make it onto the radio when you said the revenge involved lacing a cake with you-know-what.
Yep.
Especially when said housemate shared the cake with their whole family when they visited. So, therefore, spreading the laxative joy.
Mm. But what's he doing? Just giving the cake to the family?
What did the family do?
But that's not on at all. I understand people nicking other people's cake.
Yes.
But then giving the cake to the rest of the family, that feels a little off.
But he's just sharing it because he's there for his family.
Yeah, I don't
Do you
know.
Not share things with your family?
No, I don't. No,
I
don't.
I think that says more about you. Okay.
Right, I think we've all had enough of that. So let's leave those behind and return to this week's confessions with Kirk's tale, Enter Sandman.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Father Simon, brother Matt and sister Susie, I've been carrying this misdeed with me for 35 long years, and whilst I didn't think I had done much wrong at the time, I feel it's now time to fess up and seek some forgiveness. My confession involves my service with the British Army in Germany and my mother-in-law, Margot. Quite the combo, I know, but stay with me. All names have been changed to keep any drama at bay. The tale begins when I, as a young officer, rather bemused to find myself posted to a military college to do an in-service degree. There I met a girl, now my wife, at a rugby club party. After only 6 weeks of blissful courtship, she rather bravely decided it was time for me to meet her parents. They lived in a quaint village on the southeast coast of England, all thatched cottages and warm, honey-coloured stone. The welcome from my future mother-in-law was less than warm, think more Arctic. But at least at this stage, it wasn't openly hostile. We were clearly different characters. I was happy-go-lucky and out for a good time, whilst Margot was pursed-lipped and buttoned up, obviously concerned her daughter was my next target for a good time. It was evident that my mother-in-law and me would never get on famously. She would get subtle and not-so-subtle digs in whenever she could, like the time she sent me the Guinness Book of Military Disasters as a Christmas present. Soon after our first meeting. Fast forward a few years, I passed my degree, married my wife, and was posted to Germany. Being away from my mother-in-law suited me just fine. In 1990, during the third summer of love, I found myself deployed with my regiment to Kuwait for the first Gulf War. Whilst I was there, my wife wrote asking if I could pick up some desert sand for Margot. Margot had recently taken to collecting artifacts representing bits of history connected to her family. We'd already sent her a chunk of the Berlin Wall, which she had added to the other objects in a display case in her dining room. She thought desert sand would be a fitting addition. Unfortunately, in the heat of battle, literally, I completely forgot about the sand request. Post-war, we returned to the UK for a family holiday, and just before Margot, she called my wife to ask for her desert sand. When confronted by Jade, I had to admit that I had totally forgotten about the sand. I didn't think it would be such a big deal, but my wife was beside herself. All she could think of was that this was prime ammunition for Margot to further belittle her thoughtless son-in-law. So I desperately went looking for some remnants of sand amongst my kit. I shook out my beret and desert wellies, but nothing popped out, I'm afraid. I was at a loss. I certainly wasn't going back to the desert just to pick up some sand. And then it struck me, my mother-in-law lived near the coast. Why couldn't we just pop down to the beach and pick some sand up?
Yes.
And so that's what we did. Just before visiting my mother-in-law, I filled a small plastic bottle with sand on the beach, pulling out any pine needles, dog poo and fag butts, might have given the game away, and job done. Nobody would be able to tell. Everything seemed to be back on track until we got to my parents-in-law. Whilst the war had only recently ended, we were shocked to find that Margot had organised a surprise lunch reception for me, inviting some of the village to welcome home the war veteran. I was much more than a little embarrassed at being the centre of attention at this impromptu party, especially as I couldn't remember having done very much. But this seemed to be a good opportunity for a few drinks and everyone seemed to be enjoying themselves, so I settled down with a glass of wine and started to relax for the afternoon. As the wine dwindled, Margot tapped her glass and then, to my despair, called upon me to say a few words. I'm not great at unprepared speeches, but fueled by wine and chicken vol-au-vent, I scrabbled to put together a few very tame war stories of the ridiculous situations that I had landed myself in. Starting to dry up, I felt a small plastic bottle of sand in my pocket and I grabbed it and then launched into a story about how I had picked up this sample of sand on war duty and on Margot's request as I crossed the border into Iraq. I made it sound very heroic. Margot accepted the sand to smiles and applause. With great ceremony, placed it in prime position on her dresser in her dining room. That small bottle of sand remains there to this very day. So, Simon and esteemed purveyors of mercy, please grant my request for forgiveness. In my defence, I didn't know that Margot was going to throw a party and then compound it by asking me to come up with a speech. And mine was just a small white lie that saved much anguish at the time. Margot was happy, my wife was all smiles, and the villagers swayed back to their cottages with joy in their hearts. Surely this is a classic case of all's well that ends well. Even if the sand is not Iraqi sand, it's from Bognor.
Yeah.
From a geological point of view, sand is sand.
That is true.
So let's see what... but it is deception in the family breast. Let's see what Sister Susie makes of that.
Yeah, it is deception. And, sand is sand, but you should never, and he should know this by now, you should never lie to your mother-in-law. Nothing good is going to come from that. And even if it hasn't happened now, at some point in the future, something bad will happen because you've lied to your mother-in-law. So for that reason, not going to forgive
you. Is that like a karma thing, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's say that. Yeah.
As Depeche Mode said, people are people and sand is sand.
Sand is sand, they said
so
in the
what do you
second
say?
Verse.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to forgive because, as you say, sand is sand. And she wasn't to know, was she? And it was fine. But I think Kirk needs to get over himself here, really. Margot actually sounds all right. She bought you a book about the military for Christmas because you're in the army. So that's why. And also she's thrown you a party. Do get over yourself, Kirk. I think Margot sounds fine. And by the way, the sand and all the bits of the Berlin Wall, if all those bits were actually in the Berlin Wall, it'd have stretched to Helsinki. There's no way all of those bits are real. So for all those reasons, I'm going to forgive.
Something to confess. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Might you... at home have a piece of the Berlin Wall.
If you ever go to Berlin and the number of souvenir shops in Berlin saying they're selling bits of the wall. No, I haven't.
You haven't got any fake artifacts?
No. Oh, fake artifacts. Oh, yes.
fake art of
what have you got?
Fake art.
Like what?
Well, I mean, I don't know whether to get into the... I mean, let's get into it now.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, let's get into it.
So I have a... I mean, I've not very well sourced. I bought it off a man on a beach in Spain.
What is it?
And it's a piece of wood... that is from Don Quixote's windmill.
Which is definitely not.
I mean, you know, first off, you think it's obviously not that. But on the other side, it was only like 50 pesetas, which is hardly anything. It's like, you know.
So you bought a bit of wood off a bloke on the beach.
There was quite a lot of other stuff there.
I thought it was going to be.
How was he selling it?
It was going to be something to do with Jesus.
Jesus didn't have any windmills in my very limited knowledge of the Bible.
Don Quixote, but it's a made up story.
Exactly.
So why did you buy it?
All of that goes against. It, I'll admit.
Why did you buy it then?
Because, well, it was 50 pesetas, you know, what else can you get for 50 pesetas? And it was a great piece of wood. And
how many
who
bits
knows,
of wood
it
did
might
have?
Be, you know, if it turns out that is Don Quixote's windmill.
Who didn't exist?
I mean, I might take it to Antique Roadshow, something
he didn't
like that.
Exist.
Imagine how amazing that's going to be when Dennis Norden, who do they have on Antiques Roadshow?
Fiona Bruce.
So we wait and see.
That's very strange that you buy a bit of wood.
Yes. No, well, I mean, he had other stuff there.
So if I'd come along and said, I have with me a monocle which was worn by Hercule Poirot.
Yes.
Yeah.
You would have gone, oh, well, that's quite good. And it's only
50 pesetas.
50 pesetas.
There you go.
It might actually be true, except that obviously it isn't.
Well, no, but it might turn out to be true. And 50 pesetas, you know, can't go wrong,
can you?
Do you
still have the bit of wood?
Yeah.
Of course I've still got the bit of wood. I mean, it might be from...
In pride of place.
From, it's not in pride of place.
Is it above the armoire?
I don't invite everyone who comes into the house just before you sit down.
Check this out, guys.
Where you've read Don Quixote. You know there's a windmill in it.
Well this is a bit of the windmill that never existed.
Yes, so who knows?
Very, very, very strange behaviour. Yep. Still to come, we could do with some earplugs as we join a 21st birthday party for Luke's confession. Turn the music up. But first, it's Mr. Mallet's confession. I am Inspector Clouseau of the Lure. Merci et au revoir.
Shh. We won't tell anyone.
What's your secret?
confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
So today's confession comes from Monsieur Maillet, or Mr. Mallet, if you'd rather.
Okay.
Father Simon, Sister Susie, Brother Matt, Sister Holly, and the Governors of Correctness. Many years ago, I had the privilege of being a design technology teacher at a secondary school. Why, oh dear?
Well, it's just someone's going to hurt themselves, aren't they?
Oh, I see. Design technology includes what many of us would have known as woodwork, metalwork, and technical drawing, and now has the amazing title of resistant materials.
Really?
Something I did not know.
I didn't know. Wow.
This particular school was the school, kind of school, that you were sent to and was not a preferred choice of parents. This was due to the fact that the school was in special measures. The kids, though, were amazing, and I had a wonderful time teaching there, even if it did mean having an Ofsted inspection every term.
Wow.
What?
When the Ofsted inspector came into my workshop for a lesson observation, they would position themselves at the back with their pad, write down notes and make judgments as if you were any good or not. Some of my colleagues would be rather stressed out about this. Not me, though. Once the Ofsted inspector had taken position, I would imagine them looking like little weed from Bill and Ben, swaying from side to side with a wonderful grin on their face. This is children's television, Matt, from a long time ago.
Yeah,
or if they were walking around the room, I imagine them dressed in a pink tutu and green wellies trying to river dance. No stress, and in my head, they weren't even there. The head teacher had disappeared for a couple of days, and when she returned, we were called into a staff briefing in the hall at the end of the school day. She'd been to a conference for head teachers, and as a result of this conference, she had the magic solution to having a successful Ofsted inspection. Every lesson had to have a cross-curricular activity in it. I queried this as my subject already contained elements of maths, English and physics in every lesson. I was politely told in no uncertain terms that I had to add cross-curricular activities in my lessons regardless. So a maths lesson would have some history in it, and an English lesson would have to have some ICT in it, or something like that. A couple of weeks later, we had the Ofsted inspection, and they were around the school like a rash. The day before, the head teacher reminded us in morning briefing to include cross-curricular activities in all of our lessons because that's what they wanted to see. Deepest joy was mine. When it was time for the lesson, I had the class lined up outside my workshop and I could see the Ofsted inspector walking along the corridor. Once in earshot, I said, "Bonjour, mes amis." The class looked at me. I winked at them and said, "Bonjour, mes amis." And they all replied, "Bonjour, monsieur." I then replied, "Entrez, s'il vous plaît." One lad went to sit down and I said, "Non, non, non, monsieur. Allez-vous." He stood back up and I said, "Très bien. Et merci. Essayez-vous." And they all sat down and I said, "Aujourd'hui, nous allons avoir un cours de technologie en français." This meant that I was going to introduce tools in French and what their names were in English and did the same with materials and processes. The kids were really into this.
Oh, yeah.
And we were having a lot of fun. Oh, you think? Qu'est-ce que c'est? What is this? C'est une scie. I then responded in English, "This is a saw." Pour quel processus utilisez-vous une scie? What process do you use a saw for?
Yeah.
Matériel de coupe, again, I said in English. Cutting materials, obviously.
Wow.
And so, Father Simon, you could see how this lesson was going to go. At this point, I have to confess, I'm not an expert in French. I once owned a house in France, so I know enough to get by in the tax office or ordering a large glass of beer in the pub. So I had rehearsed this lesson for weeks to ensure that it was grammatically correct, as well as technically correct, and to give the aura to the inspector that I knew what I was talking about. After the lesson had finished and the class were dismissed, au revoir, the inspector asked me, "What on earth was that about?" Well, I said, "Well, the head teacher said you wanted to see cross-curricular activities, so I knocked something together to make you happy." The look on his face was priceless, but he wouldn't grade my lesson outstanding because, in his words, I was showboating.
Yes,
what
you were.
Absolutely you true. And he only graded my lesson good. What a blooming cheek. Anyway, says Monsieur Maillet, Father Simon, Sister Susie, Brother Matt, Sister Holly, Governors, "I do not ask forgiveness from the Ofsted inspector. It isn't something I crave. I do not ask forgiveness from the kids because they had a great deal of fun. However, as I was not employed by this head teacher but by her predecessor's predecessor, I do ask forgiveness from the head, as she must have been wondering, how on earth have I ended up with him? Love and best wishes, Monsieur Maillet." Well, an interesting tale from an Ofsted inspection, but you get the sense that the Ofsted inspector is probably right. That Monsieur Maillet, who's owned a house in France and knows how to talk to the tax office and order beer, was combining, I mean, very ingenious, combining his design and technology with a French lesson. What do you say, Sister Susie?
Yes, it does sound like he was showing off a bit and very clever indeed. However, I don't feel like design technology would be the subject to combine it with a language that the children might not understand because it could be dangerous. It's danger, danger.
Hey, high voltage. It's gone.
Okay. And for that reason, I just can't forgive him because I think he was just showing off instead of actually trying to teach the children.
Okay, so not going very good well for Mr. Mallet so far. What do you say,
Brother? I'm not a big fan. What's this cross-curricular? That doesn't make any sense. Just because you're doing a lesson about geography doesn't mean you have to mention chemistry or
that's what they wanted,
RE
though.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's ridiculous. So it's the system, isn't it, that's at fault there? Absolutely, and that is why I shall be choosing to forgive. And also, what's this Ofsted inspector saying, accusing him of showboating? He's a teacher, that's what they do, but of showboating. So,
Is that what they do?
Well, some of them do. This is going to get emails, never mind. I am going to forgive.
Confess All, Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
Luke says, "Dear Simon and the righteous brothers and sister, my dad, Reg, who is the origin of this confession, is, unfortunately, no longer with us. However, I feel guiltily bound to ask for his and your heavenly forgiveness. We're going back a few years now when, as the senior patriarch of the family, he was duty-bound to attend the 21st birthday of one of his 6 grandchildren. Again, being guest of honour, he was placed at the top table on full show of everyone gathered. Top tables and seating plans are, of course, notoriously difficult to get right. My tip, just don't have one.
Okay.
Is Uncle Mick still talking to Auntie Mabel? That kind of thing? Who knows? But there was never any question of putting Dad anywhere other than the top table. On completing the food and one or two beverages. The time for the music arrived, with large speakers and requisite lights, etc., appearing from behind curtains, directly behind the top table. The music started, but I was immediately beckoned over by Reg, who told me that the music was rather loud. That was the very basic translation of his complaint. Way, way, way too loud. I told him it would be rather rude to leave the top table so soon, at which point I came up with the idea of muffling his ears. And I ripped up some paper serviettes, rolled them up, and gestured to him to plug his ears with the tissue. I should say, don't try this. This seemed to work splendidly. Who needs expensive earplugs? They're not very expensive. No. When a serviette will do just as well. He spent the night generally using hand signals as to, yes, I'll have another pint, and yes, I'll have another single malt. Thank you very much. And a good night was had by all. Happy memories for everybody. 2 months after the party, Reg reports that he is losing his balance and that he is stumbling about. And this is without the aid of a beer or a whiskey, and he needed to see his doctor. Well, we managed to get an appointment quickly, and on entering the examination room, explained that until lately, Reg had not suffered any balancing issues. At this point, the doctor took out his special ear torch. Looking into his right ear, he reports that everything looked fine, and then the left ear. Ah, said the doctor, reaching for a pair of tweezers. What do we have here?
Oh.
He leant in and he fiddled around and he poked and he prodded. He clearly hooked something. His face was like that of a determined angler who had at long last got a bite. The doc slowly extracted a wax-soaked wad of tissue. He placed it in a bowl and with the tweezers gently unraveled the tissue to reveal a blue 21st birthday party logo on the reverse side. Thankfully, no one noticed and he didn't investigate the findings any further. And we put it down to over-aggressive use of cotton buds and... It wasn't that. It was my suggestion of using a serviette in his ears rather than just turning the music down, which is what I should have done in the first place. Please forgive me for not owning up to my dad, but he's one of the many things that to this day always makes me laugh and remember my fantastic, loving dad. That's from Luke. Well, I mean, Luke, I mean, he's absolutely right. The thing to do would have been, you know, when your dad says, can you turn it down? Although the thing is, having said that, that's what parents always say. Can you turn the music down? But it's a party and it's a celebration. It's for young people, Dad.
Yeah.
Jog on. Anyway, let's see what Sister Suze makes of that.
Well, I think maybe he should have been able to leave the top table when the music started. He's not going to be too bad, is he?
No.
He's getting away from that. Or what you should have done is provided earplugs for everybody who wanted them if the music was going to be that loud.
And they're not expensive.
Very, very boring. Yeah, it's not expensive and you should look after your ear health because you don't want to lose your hearing and you don't want to lose your balance issues. So, you know, I would say you should have provided earplugs for your dad. So
yes.
Therefore, I'm not going to forgive you.
Not forgiven.
Disgusting.
Okay, Brother Matthew.
Yeah, I quite agree. Why was Reg staying in the room when it was too loud? She'd have gone to the other room, shouldn't he, Reg? And also, top tables are overrated. You basically have to talk to the person who's next to you because you're not opposite anyone. Talk to them.
Have you ever rejigged a seating plan?
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, you do. You get in there early and you swap it around.
Swap it around. Yes. Brilliant. Sat next to whoever. I'm going to forgive because in a way, it's all Reg's fault. What's he doing? Don't put stuff in your ears, kids. It's not a good idea. So, yes, for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
I guess you're right. Reg did stuff his own ears.
He did,
full
didn't
of
he?
Serviette.
And he sat at the top table the entire time. And it sounds like got a lot of free drinks. So, really, Reg?
It's
all coming down on your shoulders.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
See, the thing is with seating plans and top tables is someone else has decided who you have to talk to. But what if I don't want to talk to the person that I don't? Who is this person?
But then if you decide to rearrange everything, then you're ruining the whole thing, aren't you?
I don't care.
You don't care, do you?
No.
No. Why don't you just sit up at the top table uninvited then? That's fine.
I was at the Costa Book Awards 1 year and my wife ended up talking to Dave Gilmore all night.
Wow.
And I had someone else who was really boring.
Oh, right. Okay. Can we say who it was? That would be very good if you could say who it was.
I probably should not say who
really?
It was. But
right.
She had a really good night talking to Dave Gilmore.
Dave Gilmore.
All
wow.
night.
Wow. Brilliant. What's he doing at the Costa Book Awards?
Well, he was interested in books.
Was he?
Dave Gilmore.
I know it's Dave Gilmore.
He didn't put earplugs in. It's too late for him.
No, yeah.
You have to shout. Anyway, Luke's confession didn't get much forgiveness. They were talking about... diets.
Dave Gilmore
and my wife.
All right, had he written a book about diets? Is that why he was there?
No, they were just interested in alternative ideas for food. Anyway,
alternative what, like wood? I've got some wood. Dave Gilmore wants to buy wood.
Made up wood.
Well, he lives on a farm, doesn't he?
Anyway, loose confession, didn't get much forgiveness on the people verdict, apart from this one from Joshua, who proves again, if you agree with Matt, he'll always read you out.
And Joshua in Lowestoft says, I am totally forgiving tonight's confession. They both agreed at the time it was a good idea to put tissues in his ear and everyone was happy. Plus, everyone in the end was fine. Matt's right again, lol.
I mean...
I love it. I love all of your faces whenever I read out one that says Matt's right. You're like, oh... I can't believe he's read that one out again.
But everyone has sussed you now.
Yeah, they have. They know how to do it.
Anyway, we're done on the confessions. If you've been inspired by any of them, do please send in your own confession to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Now it's over to Brother Matt for this week's secret code phrase.
And the secret code phrase this week is danger, danger, hot water. Danger, danger, hot water.
If you've listened this far, you can thread me at Mr. Simon Mayo on Threads or post it to me on Blue Sky. Remember to share the podcast with a friend. It does sound unnecessarily saucy. And leave us a glowing 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another bunch of confessions. Until then, from the pub, Sister Susie says...
Ta-ra.
From... Sounded slightly strangled there. Are you all right, Sue? Just checking.
Yeah, I'm fine.
From the tack cupboard, Sister Holly wishes you...
Good night.
A good night. And from his gutter, Brother Matthew wishes you...
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Anyway, thank you very much indeed for listening. We'll do some more for you next week.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
Did you know that willy-nilly is, in origin, will-hay-nil-hay, and it means will he or won't he?
Ah!
Just pass that on.
Interesting. What?